born in 1592 in the Highlands of Scotland, and he is still alive. He is immortal, constantly facing other immortals in combat to the death. The winner takes his enemy's head, and with it, his power. We know the truth about immortals. In the end, there can be only one. May it be Duncan MacLeod, the Highlander.
Here we are, born to be kings. We're the princes of the universe.
And welcome into Let's Watch Highlander. This is Let's Watch Highlander Season 5 Recap. And here to talk with you about it, as we are every week, I am Travis, a.k.a. TV's Travis. Over there, that's the Audie Norman. Audie, how are you?
Doing good, man. Just, you know, rolling right along, trying to get ready for Christmas junk.
Yep, the holiday season will take it out of you sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just run around trying to get presents.
Yep.
Trying to make sure they get shipped in time. And I'm doing a bunch of commissions, so trying to get those done in time
right
as well.
Yeah, but hey, it's a good problem to have, right? At least you're getting those commissions.
Oh yeah,
so that's good
for sure.
Yeah, so we have completed season five. We are five sixths of the way through Highlander the series now, which is crazy. Ooh. To think about. And this was a really good season.
Yeah, it was. It really was.
You know, looking back over kind of the list of episodes in this season, and I realized that it's a shorter season. So there's 18 episodes in this one instead of 22.
Mm-hmm.
But what that gave us was fewer filler episodes.
Yeah, for sure.
Looking at it, I can pick out 3 episodes that I really feel like are skippable in this season. In this season, and even those weren't completely devoid of being watchable. There were just like one or two things that were major issues with them instead of kind of nitpicky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like a lot of episodes, obviously we're going to find faults on everything, but we're usually having to search for it. And then there's always those couple of episodes where we're just like, yeah, just skip it. Just don't even worry about it. And this one, it's like the reasoning for that in season five is like one element of the episode. We'll be like, boy, if they'd just done that differently, this would be a fine episode.
Yeah.
So it's solid all the way through. And some of the best Highlander moments I think we've had, too, which is
pretty great. Yeah.
I mean, we had, you know, the expansion of Mythos as a character in this season. Because he gets introduced in 3 and expanded a little bit in 4, but they really gave him a lot in 5, which I liked. We had the return of Hugh Fitzcairn for an episode. That was cool.
Yeah, we did. That was fun.
Because we hadn't seen him in a couple of seasons, and that was a great little kind of moment where they set the whole thing in flashback, and we'll kind of get to. Also, I feel like really solid special guest stars throughout the season.
Oh yeah, like I started making a list of it. I was like, that they were good, they were good, they were good. Dang, that's like everybody in most of the episodes. Dadgummit.
Yep. I mean, there's one or two notable exceptions we're going to talk about, but it was always good to great special guest stars.
Yeah,
I did notice. And I don't know if this was on purpose or not, fewer music-related guest stars. Because one of the things with those first couple of seasons was you had your Joan Jett or Martin Kemp from Spandau Ballet or Roland Gift. And we didn't have as much of that this time around, but they were getting really good actors all the way through.
Yeah, for sure.
Couple of surprises, couple of returning actors playing different characters, which was neat. That we'll definitely talk about. And for my money, the best 2-part story arc they did in the series.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
So yeah, I mean, it's just it was a very good, very solid season. you know, some of the high points of the season for me were, you know, Richie, what episodes he is in, the maturation of Richie. Kind of.
Yeah.
Because
I had the same thing. Richie's arc is just such a great thing they did.
And bringing him back and then having him and Duncan be on equal footing.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, because bringing him back and then having him and Duncan actually deal with, like, they didn't bring him back and just kind of dust under the rug what happened. Like, they ran head first into what Richie had been dealing with since the Dark Quickening.
Yeah.
They didn't just kind of gloss over it all, which some shows have done that sort of thing where they just kind of, you know, whatever, you know, but this one, like, took it head on.
Which was nice. You're right. Like, a lot of times, and especially in syndicated shows where they're just kind of playing, you tend to maintain the status quo. So it's nice mm-hmm. to have repercussions from things that happened previously. And to have that go on and then see the evolution, not only of Richie as a character, but Richie and Duncan's relationship, where it started off very big brother, little brother. And mm-hmm. then Richie becomes an immortal, and it's more of that. And there's a little bit of the butting of heads, but for the most part, it's sort of Duncan is running the show, and Richie is like, yeah, sure, we'll do whatever you want. And then we saw in this season, we saw Duncan looking at Richie as much more of an equal and right. less of a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Even though still very much a kid, he's grown a lot, and Duncan sees that, mm-hmm. and that's really cool.
And I mean, even leading up to this season, we saw that with Richie, with him running the dojo and doing mm-hmm. stuff like that before everything. But then this season took it to another level. Like, I would say the series started with Duncan as the big brother in college and Richie, the little brother, still in high school.
Yep.
And at this point in season 5, they're two brothers who have been through stuff on their own through life and come together and, you know, just still have that brotherly love that you just can't get rid of.
Yeah. Yep. That connection will always be there for them. And what I like about it is that's a perfect way to put it, because, like, Duncan has, you know, has moved on from Tessa and he's continuing his life. Richie has grown. He's been through a few things. They've had their spats, but they're going to keep that connection.
Mm-hmm.
until the end of the season anyway.
Back.
Because surprises for me were that ending, even though I knew it was coming, it's still kind of one of those things where ending the season on a cliffhanger like that and killing off one of your main characters is a big thing. And we talked about it a lot last week, but I understand where they were going with the series. And I think had it been something where they could dwell on it more, it could have been the ending point of the series and sort of, this is the end of this tale, and then we'll move on to something new. And I mm-hmm. think that's kind of what they were going for a little bit.
Yeah. At the same point, I'm glad we ended the season with this instead of dwelling on it with more episodes after that kind of event. So I think it was a surprise that, because I didn't remember when it happened in the season, but having it come at the end of the season, I was like, whoa, that's a mic drop. And, you know, on this side of it, I'm like, this is probably the smartest thing they could have done.
Yeah, and it definitely can leave you wanting more, because now you want to know mm-hmm. the resolution of this. You want to know what happens to Duncan after this.
Yeah. What the heck is up with that stupid demon that made all this happen?
Yeah. Yeah, which is another thing this season did, was it brought in more supernatural beyond immortality
mm-hmm.
to the show. I mean, we kicked it off with Cassandra and the fact that she can do magic and prophecies right. and this great evil and all of that. And there were little touches of that. And
her specific prophecy about Duncan.
Yes.
That at the beginning of the season, we're like, oh, that's cute. And we're like, wink, wink, nudge, nudge to all you other people who know what's coming later. It's like, mm-hmm. oh, okay.
Yeah. And I do wonder if that was the plan from the beginning, or if they sort of, as the season went on and they were writing episodes, they realized, ooh, this would be a good way to end it. And now we can kind of retcon what the prophecy was, because that prophecy in the first episode can very much fit and contain itself within that episode.
Absolutely.
So it's hard to say if they had that idea from the beginning or not, in terms of like the Ahriman demon being both the actual.
Both the first and last episode were written by David Tynan, so I'm willing to bet he had that in mind from the beginning.
Could be.
He's, for this season. Like, I'm willing to bet he had those two specific, the beginning and the end of the series, of the season, plotted, like, okay, how do we fill this in and lead up to it?
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. And Tynan is responsible for writing most of, or a large chunk of the episodes we really like. Mm-hmm. So, it's entirely possible. I think the only thing that would have made, and it, again, it's sort of the hindsight thing, is bringing Cassandra back for that final episode would have nailed it. Would have nailed it down, would have hammered it home, but maybe they just, it was scheduling. Who knows? There's probably a multitude of reasons why it didn't happen.
Sure. That would have been an interesting character to have in the mix for that particular story.
Yeah. Interestingly, this is the series that David Tynan is kind of most known for. He wrote 30-something episodes of the show, and he's got other TV series credits, but they're all kind of one episode, two episodes here and there. Beastmaster, The Lost World, Poltergeist, The Legacy, but Highlander, for some reason, just got him all over it. 33 episodes.
I mean, sometimes you find the thing that you like the best, and that's what you really want to pour yourself into, so.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, he, you know, he wrote, in this season, David Tynan wrote Prophecy, Manhunt, The Messenger, Comes a Horseman, The Ransom of Richard Redstone, and Archangel. So, you know, those are all really solid episodes this season.
Yeah.
Setting up the Comes a Horseman two-parter. You know, The Messenger, which was a great episode with really kind of delving into sort of immortals and the idea of laying down your sword and living living in peace. And that whole thing with the character of the messenger who is posing as Mythos, using that name, but nobody knows anything about him.
Which makes it even more sense looking at that, how Kronos is, when he shows up and comes a horseman, he talks about, I've been hearing things about you, Mythos. And it's like, oh, right, because this other dude was going around just throwing the Mythos name around like crazy.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, so that totally makes sense. So, yeah, this was, I can't say enough good things about this particular season. It's probably... It's my favorite season of the show. The show really was its best in seasons 3, 4, and 5. That was where, because season 3 had the introduction to Mythos. We got Kallus as sort of the best villain of that season. And it was the one of the few times where we had a single villain showing up multiple times like that.
Right.
Because it was like basically him, Horton, or Xavier St. Cloud.
Right.
Are kind of the ones that did that. Even Kronos really is only in one story, and then the actor comes back portraying, you know.
Yeah.
But Kronos himself is only in kind of the one story, the two episodes. But like season 4 really dove into stretching the mythology and building all of that and dealing with the Watchers, which was another thing that I was kind of surprised about this season was the lack of Watchers in it.
Yeah, we don't get much of him at all. We get Joe just a little bit here and there, and when he's there, it's not much about Watcher stuff. It's just him being there as part of the crew.
Yeah, I mean, they occasionally mention the Watchers. He talks about how they're sort of restructuring and reorganizing them, and he can get information for Duncan, but there's only a few times where Watchers are really mentioned. I remember it mentioned in Archangel because they worried that, or they were wondering if the old man was a Watcher, and Duncan's like, no, he didn't have a tattoo. But the Watchers themselves, before being such an integral part, especially of the finale of season 4.
Right.
And then to basically just kind of be not there for season 5 for the most part, not in the same capacity, which I did not remember that about this season.
Yeah. And it was probably a conscious choice from the writing and stuff to be like, okay, we've done a bunch of Watcher stuff. Let's kind of leave that alone for right now, unless you've got a really good idea. But with a shorter season, we had a lot of other really good ideas. So
yeah, We really did.
Especially with expanding Mythos's background and everything.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's not a lot of low points to talk about in the season, but I will say that episodes 4 through 6 are kind of... If you're gonna miss anything or kind of have something as background noise, those would be the episodes for it. And those mm-hmm. are Glory Days, Dramatic License, and Money No Object.
Right.
Glory Days was one that just sort of was... It was a little too soap opera. Mm-hmm. It had the weird subplot where they tried to give Joe some more story, but it felt so weird for Joe to be like...
Yeah.
If you remember, we talked about, like, it didn't feel like Joe's reactions to thing where he was so down on himself because of his the loss of his legs. Like, mm-hmm. he'd never been like that before. It had never been this thing that was a problem for him, and suddenly it was because he ran into his high school sweetheart.
And that one also, it just seemed like he was emotionally a fish flip-flopping back and forth, mm-hmm. and it just made very little sense. So
yeah, he was feeling sorry for himself, and then he was angry, and then he was sorry for himself again, and he just it was weird. So Glory Days wasn't great. Dramatic License had potential, mm-hmm. but it was really hurt by the guest star. That was the Sandra Bernhardt yeah. episode.
Yeah.
Which is a bummer because, again, it's a idea that has potential, and Alistair Duncan is the other guest star, and he's great. Mm-hmm. But we just, both of us, couldn't really get past Sandra Bernhardt and couldn't buy her in that role. Because the character yeah. that she played was so much of like the sarcastic Sandra Bernhardt type character, and then suddenly has this emotional flip. And we're, mm-hmm. it didn't feel right. Like I couldn't go there with that character.
Yeah. It was just an inconsistent episode. Mm-hmm. Cause like it started all serious. And then by the end we get a wacky sword fight and I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Huh? Okay.
Yeah. Which was really also the problem with Money No Object. Episode 6 was, it mm-hmm. was a little too goofy, a little too wacky in humor. And you know, Nicholas Lay was in that as, what was his character's name? Corey.
Corey Raines.
But the episode itself was a little too slapsticky, which is interesting because they came back to that formula later with the Ransom of Richard Redstone, but they executed mm-hmm. it better in that one.
Yeah, that one and Stone of Scone.
Yes.
Like, good Lord.
Yeah, Stone of Scone was also a lot more humorous, but executed mm-hmm. better. Like,
right.
Dramatic License and Money No Object, it was like the test run of trying to be a little bit funnier. And mm-hmm. they just, the Dramatic License, the problem with that one was tonally it was off and Sandra Bernhardt didn't work.
Yeah.
Money No Object, the problem was that it just, I think it needed either more time to bake or they needed to streamline it somewhere. And it just, mm-hmm. it felt off. But
was that the one that had the super serious conversation between Duncan and Amanda at the very end that we were all like,
yes.
Which one was that?
Yeah.
Cause that's the other thing. It was like, okay, this is the best thing about this episode. And we've only done 5 minutes on it at the very end. Like, why the heck are we not talking about this more?
No. I think, was that this one or was that Haunted? Was Amanda in Haunted? No, Amanda was not in Haunted, so it must have been so. Money No Object. Yeah, because
I can remember. And
that's right, because Amanda's in those first few episodes, and in Money No Object, they have that serious discussion at the end because she had run off with Corey, and Duncan's like, what are you doing? What's going on here? Type of thing. Like, why? Mm-hmm. And it was her whole, that whole serious thing. And
yeah.
And this is the scene that happens after we literally have Nicholas Lay as Corey get blown up in a cartoonish fashion,
right,
by a bomb. Like,
and then after we have that, and then after 5 seasons they finally try to define the relationship. It's just like, okay guys, we got to work on this.
Yeah, so I mean, those are not the strongest episodes of Highlander. They're still watchable, mm-hmm. But they're definitely they're just not as good.
Mm-hmm.
And they stand out, I think, more in this season because, like, episode 3 is Manhunt, and that's with Carl.
Yeah.
And Carl and Eric McCormick is in that one too. Mm-hmm. And that was a really good episode. And was a surprising episode because it did the trope subversion of it set us up for an evil immortal chasing Carl. And then we got to kind of spin that in a better way.
Yeah.
So that one was so good. And then you go from that into this melodramatic soap opera thing with Glory Days that just felt like an idea that never really got off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And Dramatic License is, again, an idea that doesn't quite, like the execution just doesn't work.
Yeah, I think that was the one with Dramatic License. That felt more like they had everything right. They just didn't execute it right.
Yeah, if you get if you get somebody who is more believable as both the sarcastic Carolyn and the emotionally the emotional Carolyn, who just wants to be with her immortal husband, I think if you get somebody who can portray both of those better than Sandra Bernhard did, it's an okay episode. Like, there's nothing wrong with that, because then you can get away with sort of the silly tone of things.
Right.
Because it's like Duncan and the Alistair character don't hate each other. So their fighting you can have their fighting devolve into just being silly. And you can have the stuff that's told in flashback be silly because it's being told by somebody as part of a book. So it's embellished. It was just Sandra Bernhard just dragged that episode down for both of us.
Yeah. And it's nothing against her as a career, because I think we mentioned somehow at this point in her career, she just could not do this series, this episode, this character. She has gone on to do plenty of stuff that has garnered, you know, all kinds of praise. So it was the same thing as when we saw Joe Pantoliano.
Yeah, yep.
And it's just like, how could he be so bad? I don't know. But for this series, he was really bad.
Whether it's and, like a,
you know, for this season, Sandra Bernhard, for whatever reason, just could not, could not clear the bar.
I don't know if it's a lack of preparation time or not given good direction. Who knows what it is? But yeah, it just didn't work, and that's what hurt that particular episode. And Money No Object has all the hallmarks of something that should work. Because Nicholas Lay, again, and I've mentioned him several times, but he's great, and I like him.
Yeah.
But it was because it was another story dealing with, like, kind of 1920s era crime, and we had just done that in Glory Days with the mobster kid.
Yeah.
And now we're going in a completely different slapsticky way with this, you know, Bonnie and Clyde thing that just felt like it never really got off the ground.
Yeah.
Like, it had just weird tonal shifts to it. And then, of course, but then it has that ending moment with Duncan and Amanda. It's like, why couldn't we do better with this the whole way through?
Yeah. Or at least drag that thought through the episode. Like, have more of that conversation, even in the 20s. Like, say Duncan and Amanda are starting that conversation in the freaking 1920s.
Yeah.
And then come back to it. Present day, that would have been interesting.
That would have, yeah. And then, you know, on top of that too, you go out of Money No Object into Haunted, and Haunted was a good episode because it was so much story arc for Richie, and it was things. And what was cool about Haunted was it was things that happened to Richie while we didn't see him coming home to roost. Right. It was that idea that he had, because in the first episode with him this season is End of Innocence, where he just gets into a fight with some dude and then has to deal with the fallout of that. But we see it all happen. We see the fight start.
Right.
And, you know, Richie's got a chip on his shoulder. Sure. But then we see that, oh, this chip on his shoulder has been around for quite a bit longer, because now we see prior to that even, he just got into a fight with some guy because he was in a bad mood. Mm-hmm. And that dude happened to have a mortal wife. And that whole thing... That was a crazy one. That had some soap opera elements to it, but it was executed much better.
Yes, it was. I also like that it was an interesting way to get Richie a new sword that wasn't just, hey, just take this. It's like, if you remember, he takes the sword of the guy he killed.
Yep.
like, and Duncan basically passes it on to him as like, here, you've earned this.
Yeah.
And not in the most positive way, but like, you're part of the game now. This is how things work sometimes.
Yep. Yeah. So I liked those because basically Richie shows up for End of Innocence and he's kind of gone for a few episodes, comes back in Money No Object, but he's just sort of there.
Yeah.
And then it's like Haunted. He's back and we sort of get to see. And that's where that also had such a great moment at the end of it with Richie and Duncan, where they that's where they found their common ground, and where Richie is sort of dealing with the fact that he's in the game and he can't really get out of it, but it's so much for him and he can't take it, but he knows that he has to. And Duncan's like, yeah, you have to, there's no real way to get out of it. So I really liked that. And it sort of, it allowed us to bring Richie back to have resolution to the conflict between him and Duncan, and then a reason for Richie to now be like, all right, I got to go clear my head and find myself for a bit, in a healthier way than I have been for the last few months.
Right.
So that was kind of cool. We had Little Tin God. That was a great episode. Kind of dealing with like immortality and the way that it can be spun and sort of like using it to your advantage, the way that that character of Larka did, where he used his immortality as a way to be a god king to primitive people, and he continued to do that into the current day.
I was going to say, it was an interesting way to look at immortality through the veil of religion and how it was used in a religious way. And again, how doing that has consequences if you're not the actual god you proposed yourself to be.
Yeah. Yep. It works out great for you until it doesn't. And when it turns, you better be able to deal with the fallout. And that one also had some Watcher stuff in it, which was kind of neat. And it had really great Roger Cross as well as Andrew Divoff. Both of them were really good in it. Andrew Divoff was doing Andrew Divoff. He was just over the top, and that's what he does. Like, he is an over the top character actor, and he's perfect for stuff like that. He is who you get a hold of to be the mustache twirling bad guy, or the bad guy that's got an eye patch and like all of that. And to play that off with Roger Cross, who is the young immortal who's just become immortal and is playing it very kind of straight by the numbers, was a great juxtaposition. And I liked that a ton. So,
and Divoff is able to be the mustache twirling kind of bad guy in this series without going too far and feeling cheesy. Like, I think that's what we appreciate about him, especially in this episode the most, that it was just like, yes, I'm over the top, but I still fit in this universe perfectly well in that over the topness.
Because he's going to go to like a 10.5. He's going to give you a silly, weird accent, whether it's his very Canadian accent in season one or it's this where he's vaguely Hispanic accent.
Right.
We're not entirely sure because it was sort of, it was South America, but it was like pre-Columbian South America that he started down there. It's all sorts of stuff. But like, he's going to go that just enough over the top to be silly, but not too silly. And like I say, Roger Cross is just, that guy has had a hell of a career, and this was pretty early on for him. And
yeah,
he's so good at playing that character that's very conflicted and just trying, he's trying to figure out what immortality is. He doesn't even understand what's happening to him. And I thought he came across with that really well. So,
and I also appreciated in that episode that they, Duncan basically at the end sends him to Carl Robinson to be his mentor.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like just a little callback to like, hey, Carl's still around and doing stuff. It's like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. Like, just little nuggets like that are the things we love about the show. And they did that. And it was just like, okay, yeah.
Yep. The Messenger was a great episode because it dealt with this mysterious figure who is telling all the immortals to lay down their swords. We can all get along. We don't have to fight. Meanwhile, mm-hmm. it's just a trail of dead immortals behind him because he's doing all this, but he's not like he's the idea man that doesn't follow through with anything, right? He just shows up and says, hey, this would be cool if we all put our swords down. Anyway, I got to run. I'm going on to the next town. And the bad guy, the bad immortals, the immortals that'll take advantage of that are just kind of following behind, licking their chops like, ooh, this is a buffet.
Yeah. That was one where we were very much like, I want to know more about this person, why they're doing this, where they came from, and is there somebody following them? Like, we get it in this episode that it's just one guy who doesn't believe what he's selling, and he just happens to be here. But I, you know, we were like, man, is there somebody following him? Could that have been a thing?
Yeah.
So,
well, and that, and it was two of our better special guests in the season, Ron Perlman as the messenger, the fake Mythos, who just kills it. He's so good.
Right.
And what I loved about it is it's Ron Perlman, very subdued. He doesn't get angry. He doesn't like become demonstrative the way that Ron Perlman is capable of, but it's always simmering right there under the surface.
He comes like, close to it once and you see that and like having gone through years of seeing Ron Perlman just lose it on people in various TV shows and movies, you're like, oh, there it is. There's the guy I know.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Having an actor like that there and knowing what he's capable of and then having him dial it all down means that you're just you're white knuckling it, anticipating that moment when it's gonna happen. And it makes that for a compelling performance. And then Robert Wisden as Culbraith, who you know, we talked about him a lot in that episode, is a great foil for Duncan because he's not evil for the sake of being evil, but he's definitely not a good man either.
Right.
And we sort of see those two sides of it. Like, he starts off, he's just sort of doing what he thinks is right. He thinks he is the compelling villain because he believes that what he is doing is the right way to do things.
Mm-hmm.
And Robert Wisden does a good job with that.
Wisden. For sure. But, and also, that episode, just the conversation between the messenger and actual Mythos was just chef's kiss.
Oh, so good. So good. We've talked about Comes a Horseman in Revelation 6:8. That is just a fantastic two-parter, and it gives us so much more Mythos while still being everything we know about Mythos. Like, we learn more about him, we get his background, but also he's still Mythos throughout the whole thing, and that's a survivor.
Yeah, right. And we see that's part of him that's always been there, even though we don't like the other parts that used to be there.
Right.
But it's still the piece of him that's always been there that, you know, his horseman buddies all know. Like, they know him.
Yep.
But they don't realize that he has changed until the end of that two-parter. And it's like, what? It's like, yep.
Yep. Ransom of Richard Redstone, we talked about earlier, but what I liked about that was a funny episode. That's a levity-filled episode that worked, that executed well.
Oh,
because it focused on Duncan and Richie. So now, you know, we catch back up with Richie after a few episodes, and we've just had this heavy, heavy stuff with Mythos. And now it's like, oh, hey, here's Richie, and he's pretending to be an American millionaire who somebody decided they're going to kidnap him to get the ransom.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a fun episode. Plus, it's one of those.
And also,
oh, go ahead.
I was gonna say, just the fun they had with that episode, playing with the themes and music of James Bond.
Yes,
and how close they came to being James Bond, but not legally being James Bond.
Mm-hmm.
But it still sounded so good that way. Like,
yeah,
chef's kiss in that episode. Mwah.
Also, that was one of those episodes that utilized the flashback where it was just long enough that Duncan is still, like, in present day, everybody that would have seen him in those flashbacks is still around, or most of them are. So he has to act it up and act older, which is always kind of a fun thing to do, because a lot of times all of our flashbacks are set 200-400 years ago or 150 years ago. And so it's like, yeah, none of the people that were there other than the immortals are alive today. So Duncan can just be Duncan.
Yeah. But this one only, you know, his grandson.
Yeah. This one only goes back like 20 years. So mm-hmm. he can't be somebody's grandson in 20 years. He's got to kind of,
nope.
He's got to play that part a little bit better. So I loved that. That was great. Duende was a great episode. That was a better episode than I remembered.
Mm-hmm.
In part because of Anthony DeLongis.
Right.
Was such a good bad guy.
Yeah.
He just relished in being a bad guy. And he played it so well. And it was an episode full of passion.
Uh-huh. He's one of those bad guys that definitely believes he is right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That his shit don't stink and he is right.
Absolutely.
And he's above everybody. And it was just like really interesting to see that kind of bubble up throughout the episode. Like we realize at the very beginning he's that way, but we watch it happen with the other characters in the episode and they figure that out. It's just like, oof.
Yeah. Yep. So it's a good episode. It's a really good episode. And then it goes right into Stone of Scoon, which is all a flashback and is just fun. Because we get Hugh back, Amanda's there, there's a caper, and just kind of hijinks ensue. And it's, again, it's the way to execute a levity-filled episode.
And it's really funny because this is what I thought was the absolute best episode that dealt with anything actually historical.
Yes.
And like set the bar compared to every other episode in this season of not being that great, of not dealing with it as well. But this one definitely, yeah, they did it tongue in cheek in points and it worked so well because of the way they executed it and, you know, followed through with it. And it's just like, oh my gosh.
And I kind of feel like, number one, it's a silly story, right? Of the stone being stolen and the fact that it was college kids doing a prank, whatever. So that lends itself to it. But I also think that because it is the type of historical event that they are weaving into the Highlander mythos that isn't World War II or you know, the Scottish-English War, like these heavy, heavy events. It's just this funny thing that happened that didn't really harm anyone. And so to work it in the way they did, sure, I got a little hand waving, a little like, oh yeah, Duncan just happens to be basically buddies with Winston Churchill and can get everything just.
Sure.
Everything can just disappear because Duncan says so. But like, it works. And so I think having a real historical event, also one where you can use real newsreel footage of it.
Yeah, that was really fun and impressive the way they did that.
Yeah. So I definitely dug that quite a bit.
Because we actually skipped over the Valkyrie, talking about that. But I think because they kind of inserted themselves into history more than used the history.
And
it was okay. It was fine. But it was just like, okay, Duncan was intricately
part of Project Valkyrie. And
okay. Yeah.
But also, like, it's not our first time dealing with World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And it's arguably a less interesting episode dealing with World War II.
Yeah.
Because we've seen it already and we've tread that ground.
We've got his immortal counterpart doing the same thing, taking out who she thinks is going to be the biggest bad guys. And
yeah.
Stumbles upon some white supremacy, felt a little too close to home, yada, yada.
Mm-hmm. I also, the Modern Prometheus was an interesting episode because, oh, I'm sorry. First, Forgive Us Our Trespasses was one that had some cool ideas of like, our one issue with it was it felt tonally weird for Duncan to all of a sudden be like, well, maybe I am a murderer. And that felt a little bit forced, but at the same time, given sort of what's gone on, there was a nice play there where we've got Mythos being like, yeah, well, look, we all make mistakes. Okay. But you got to move on from them. Like I did. And like you're doing with me. So I did. It wasn't the strongest episode, but it was a good episode.
Yeah. And it felt like the only reason that wasn't as great is because of it feeling like Duncan was forced to feel these things so that Amanda and Mythos can be the people trying to rescue him. And
it's like,
okay.
Yeah, there wasn't an organic reason.
Which was interesting.
Like, that in itself is interesting, right? Having Mythos mm-hmm. and Amanda being the ones trying to prop him up and bring him back from the edge. But
right.
But we need to get there in a better fashion than we did, and sort of
mm-hmm.
it felt like, well, Duncan's feeling this way because that's how we wrote this script, instead of right. the character actually going in that direction.
Or it felt this way because everybody's knuckleheads and won't sit down and just talk to each other for a few minutes before
that too.
Duncan goes to confront the dude.
Yeah. Forgive us. So that was Forgive Us Our Trespasses. Modern Prometheus could have been better. We mm-hmm. both agreed that using Lord Byron as your immortal wasn't the best choice.
Yeah.
And that's no fault of Jonathan Firth, who played him, Colin Firth's brother.
Right.
That's not his fault. We felt that it would have been more interesting to have the immortal character in that be like Percy Shelley.
Right.
And
or Mary Shelley, either
or
one.
Or Mary Shelley, either one.
I think would have been interesting.
Because the idea that like immortals were the influence to the book Frankenstein or the Modern Prometheus is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And having it was the we've already seen the burned out immortal. And we've seen it done yeah. better.
Right.
And this one just didn't quite do it. Plus, we had the subplot of the burned out immortal causing this young kid to OD. That's like, yeah. okay, so we have to care about this young kid who we've never seen before, and he just shows up for this one episode to be a plot device.
Right. So now our bad guy is not as sympathetic as much as just an a-hole.
Yeah, exactly. Which brought us to the final episode, which is Archangel, which really dove mm-hmm. into the supernatural, bringing a demon into things.
Yep.
And what was interesting about that was that the show doesn't like waste any time with it. It's just like, oh yeah, demons, here you go. Here's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Richie being the one who is the youngest of all of them being like, well, why couldn't it be real? Immortals are real. Mm-hmm. Why can't demons be real? Meanwhile, you've got 5,000-year-old Mythos like, look, I've been around for a while. I ain't never seen no demon.
And one, I want to be like, well, Mythos, you stick your head in the sand a whole lot yes. to get away from stuff. And two, I like that this was consistent with Richie's character throughout the series. Every mm-hmm. time there's something that could be or actually is supernatural, Richie's the one questioning it and asking the questions. Duncan's always like, eh, maybe, I don't know. I've never seen it, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Mythos is like, I've never seen it. I was like, well, you run away from everything, Mr. I'm going to protect myself. So,
yeah.
Joe sitting over there like, how would we've got all these records. I'm like, Joe, you look at immortals, period. You're not looking at everything else. That would be a cool show if we saw the spinoff of The Watchers, who's like some, you know, supernatural detective agency or something.
Well,
that's not the show.
Those are the Watchers in the Buffy universe. So that's the mm-hmm. that's the split, right? There's the other Watchers that are off with the Slayer and dealing with vampires, and they don't compare notes with our Highlander Watchers. That's the problem. They need one unified database.
That's the most amazing crossover I think I've ever heard, and I think I want to consider canon now because that'd be amazing.
And because the funny thing is like from Joe Dawson's perspective, essentially because of immortals, they have this kind of inner bias to push everything to being immortals and that, you know, well, yeah, your tales of vampires are just immortals. Werewolves are just immortals wearing fur coats. Mm-hmm. You know, they're just immortal furries. Right. Like that's all. So they can kind of explain everything away that way. So it makes sense that Joe wouldn't buy it. And you're right. Mythos mm-hmm. is very much ostrich in the sand. Like I see nothing. I know nothing. I'm just going to be over here, you know, pretending that I'm a watcher.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I love the consistency of Richie being the one that's like, why not? Why couldn't it be? Makes perfect sense to me. And Duncan
sort of... because
of
that, he's got Duncan's back more than anybody.
Yes. And Duncan is just stubborn and doesn't want to listen to anyone. So even though he's seen mm-hmm. magic, he's seen prophecies, he's seen, you know, the soothsayers and all of this kind of stuff, he doesn't want to believe any of it because it just doesn't make sense to him. So he's just the stubborn Scott.
mm-hmm.
Even though his entire life has been running around cutting the heads off of other guys that have been alive for thousands of years. But hey.
Yeah.
Vampires, bridge too far. Demons, nah.
Right. Lord, guys.
And that demon messing with Duncan and the prophecy, and then bringing the prophecy that was brought up in the first episode and we figured was just contained for that episode, and then there it is, and bringing it back and being like, no, this is probably what she was actually talking about. Like, this is a bigger, this is a bigger evil. And that demon knowing and messing with him to the point of we lose Richie.
Right.
And it's done in a way. Okay. So spoiler alert for the movie Serenity. If you haven't seen it by now, look, it's been 17 years. I don't feel bad.
Right.
Richie's death is like Wash's death in Serenity, where you aren't prepared for it. Like, that was the thing with that death in Serenity in the theater that first night, and really the first probably half dozen times I saw that movie, is the movie is building and building and building, and you're seeing all this stuff happen, and then all of a sudden you are blindsided by what happens to Wash.
Yep.
This episode builds and builds and builds, and it signposts it and it tells you something's going to happen, but you're not prepared for what it is that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden to have the reveal that Richie is actually standing in front of him now instead of one of the visions. And then before we can even process that, that's whether it's actually Richie or not, his head's been taken and Duncan is now dealing with the fallout of that and the quickening
right.
of his little brother. And you don't have a chance to prepare for it. And so then it's just the emotional gut punch of that is huge, especially for a character that we've seen grow and that's been around since our first episode. So it's a lot.
And it's a lot. It hits you out of nowhere and it makes sense. If this demon probably knows about whatever stupid prophecy it is, knows Duncan's the one, what's he going to do as soon as he gets out? He's going to break Duncan so that he cannot fulfill his prophecy. How does he do that? He makes Duncan kill the best friend he has.
Yep. And the one of his circle of friends, the one person who actually believes that there could be a demon that could do something to help him with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Really, really good. It's a it's a very strong season. Season 5, totally worth watching. I have a favorite episode and a least favorite episode. I think you do too. We probably ought to talk about those.
Yeah. Let's talk about it.
Well, who the hell is Chubby Checker in the grand scheme of things anyway? I mean, I know how tall Nero was. I know Caesar's favorite food. I know Helen of Troy didn't have that great a face and it only launched 100 ships, not 1,000.
So favorites, least favorites. I mean, this is an episode full of, or a season full of great episodes, great moments. But definitely I have a favorite and I also have a least favorite. And I think you do too. Let's start with the bad news. Let's start with our least favorite episode. So your least favorite episode of season 5.
Dramatic License.
It's that Sandra Bernhard, the Sandra Bernhard factor.
Yeah, it just, between her not being close to goodness, and again, her character kind of flip-flopping everywhere, her like super stereotypical gay assistant drove me nuts.
Yeah.
And I know it's, you know, you could say it's a product of its time. It's like, no, they pushed that a little too much for my taste.
But it is. It's the 90s. They didn't know. Nobody knew how to write gay people in the 90s. So they just made them cartoon characters. It really was that way. I mean, look at like even the stylist in The Rock, which would have been right about the same time as this. Way effeminate, way over the top. That's just what was done. So yeah, it definitely bothered me too.
And then just trying too hard for the fun and funny. And like we said, just not executing on it for this episode, really. Like that sword fight at the end was fun, but it felt really weird and out of place compared to the rest of the episode.
Yeah. Yep. Slicing
the candles, trying to see if they cut the candles. Oh, no. Oh, yeah, you did cut the candles. Way to go, guy. Okay.
Yeah, and because earlier in that episode, we had seen kind of similar tone in fights, but they were being told to us.
Mm-hmm.
They were in the flashback and they were supposed to be embellished. And then we're seeing that exact same thing happen in present day, like for real. So, yeah. Okay. So your least favorite is Dramatic License. My least favorite episode of the season. It was a toss up. And it was almost Dramatic License, but my least favorite was Glory Days.
That's the other one I was leaning towards too. So
I feel like I love Jim Burns as Joe Dawson so much. And that particular episode felt so weird for him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just didn't make sense that he would be that just like the idea that he would be so upset about somebody from high school seeing him with his legs missing. Because it never has been an issue for anyone he's ever talked to up until that point. Yeah. And suddenly it was. And that just didn't work for me.
Yeah. Because there are definitely times where he's like, they've mentioned his legs or something, and he just, you know, taps on the leg down there. He's like, yep, sorry, they're not real. No shame at all.
No shame at all. And suddenly he's got all this shame for it. And it just, the woman that was playing his high school sweetheart, just felt like she was straight off of a soap opera and like super melodramatic, and it just didn't land for me. And I didn't like I didn't love the whole thing with the mobster kid either, because that was another one of those cases where it's like, okay, no, Duncan could have taken this kid under his wing a lot better, like,
yeah,
than he tried. Like, he put forth a token effort to try and help this kid, and the kid's like, I don't want to listen to you, I'm gonna go do my own thing. And Duncan's like, all right, cool. And just walks away, essentially. So,
yeah.
Glory Days, I did not like. Ace Moon is in our chat and said that their least favorite episode was Modern Prometheus. So,
which again, you know, we talked about the ways we would have liked to seen that handled better. So that one's totally understandable too. It not as bad for me, but I totally understand it.
No, Modern Prometheus for me wasn't nearly as bad. It's that episode 4 to 6, and even with Money No Object was close. It was in the running, but I let that one slide a little bit more. But no, Glory Days for me was the low point in the season, and they got the low points out of the way quickly. So
they
that's
did
always good. All right, so we've known your least favorite. Now tell us your favorite episode of this season, season 5.
Okay, I could have gone for the two-parter.
Mm-hmm.
I could have gone for the finale.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't want to do that. I wanted to do another one. And for me, that's Manhunt.
Good one.
Because I love Carl Robinson coming back and us having that character. I love how, like we talked about earlier, how they turn the formula on its head. Because you've got Eric McCormick in there as Matthew McCormick.
Yeah.
Which is funny in and of itself.
That'll never not be funny to me. Eric McCormack played Matthew McCormick.
Right. And he shows up and he's basically hunting Carl.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, what? Why is he hunting Carl? And the flashbacks show why he's hunting Carl.
Yeah.
Because they do a very interesting thing of showing us, again, involving Carl and the way they handle race and racism.
Mm-hmm.
On Highlander has been very interesting, and the way they handled Carl's story in the Deep South as a slave and a slave of the family that Matthew McCormick is married into.
Yep.
But still, Matthew, knowing he's an immortal and trying to train him.
Yep.
And then, like, Carl's like, okay, fine, but I gotta go settle some things. And Matthew's like, no, don't do that. That's my family.
Right.
We talked about this, and Carl's like, it's my life, dude.
Yeah.
And the way that conflict started out, and you're like, okay, dang it. And the way it ended with Duncan coming between the two of them and making them stop being such knuckleheads and realize and see each other for the actual humans they are, not just immortals and not just what they used to be.
Yes.
It was just a great way of telling that story with immortals.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that basically McCormick helped Carl get out of the situation by having him be killed, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great choice. because as Ace mentions in the chat, that's the quote problem with season five is there's so many good episodes, it's hard to choose.
Right.
My favorite episode of season five, I looked at Manhunt as a possibility. I loved The Messenger, and I thought about that one. But for me, it came down to part one of the two-parter. Comes a Horseman, for me, when I think of this series, Comes a Horseman is the first episode I think of, because it's that moment with Mythos and Duncan next to his car where Mythos confesses that everything that Duncan has been hearing about him is true. And not only is it true, but it's true because it's what he wanted to do at the time, and he was good at it, and that's it. There wasn't any, he wasn't trying to apologize to Duncan for what had happened. He's like, look, it happened because I was good at what I did, and I enjoyed it at that time, and that's all there is to say about it. And it's just that episode hits me every single time I see it. So for me, Comes a Horseman is my top episode of Highlander as a whole, and certainly of season five.
Yeah. It's wild that this is the season that we get both Mythos' backstory revelation, and this is the season that Richie dies. Like,
yeah.
No wonder. Good Lord.
Ace in the chat's favorites were either the Stone of Scoon or the Ransom of Richard Redstone. Both great choices. Stone of Scoon is in my top tier of season five because it's great seeing Hugh back. Episodes with Amanda are always fun, and this one was a fun episode because stakes of what was going on were so low in comparison to other things. It wasn't an end of the world. It wasn't a demon. You know, it's not nobody's unleashing a plague to try and kill all the world's population. It's just Amanda wants to steal something, and she thinks that the stone is a giant diamond, and hilarity ensues. So
I think that's a great choice. What makes that episode so fun is it's fun throughout the whole episode. Like in the beginning of the episode, they're having fun betting on golf, of all things.
Yeah.
Then it's fun when Duncan's describing this treasure, and Amanda's like, yes. And when they get there, Amanda's like, what? It's a stone?
It's literally just a big rock.
And then Duncan taking the stone and making a copy and then breaking the copy and taking it back.
Yep.
Amanda and Fitz getting arrested. And then Duncan gets them out of jail because he knows the Prime Minister. Because of course.
And even something as silly as like they're sitting in that bar making their getaway and Amanda is complaining about the sketch they have of her in the newspaper not being accurate. Like it's so dumb and I love it. So that's a good choice. That's our favorites. That's the top. And I mentioned my favorite moment is Duncan and Mythos and that whole exchange. I mean, there's a lot of Mythos moments that could make that list for me, but that's that one. And then there is also in Forgive Us Our Trespasses, the moment where he meets him before he can have his little duel, and Mythos tries to talk him out of it and then just says, okay, fine, I tried, and steps out of the way and then shoots him in the back.
Yeah.
So
that was great. I think my favorite moment is definitely from Archangel when Duncan is telling Richie, apparently this is what I've got to do. And Richie stands up like, okay, what are we going to do about this? We gushed about it last episode, but just the fact that Richie and Duncan's relationship has come all the way to here where Richie's like, I've got your back no matter what. If you see demons, you see demons. I'm with you. Whatever we got to do to fight them, I'm with you.
Yep.
Yeah. Which just makes the ending that much more crushing, but it's still, I think, my favorite moment because we see that throughout the rest of the episode. When Richie's talking to Mythos and Joe about it, and like, maybe Duncan's not seeing things, guys. Like, this can't be real. Richie's like, whatever. I'm not going to walk away from him. I don't think he's crazy. I think he's telling the truth, and I'm going to have his back. And it's just like, yes.
And it's enough to get Joe and Mythos to go to Duncan to want to help.
Right.
Even though they're kind of too late and there's really nothing that they can do, at least Richie is enough to get them to want to do that. And given where Richie and Duncan were at the start of the season,
Right.
To have that be where they are now, where Richie is just like, "You, I got you. Doesn't matter what's going on. I'm here. We're dealing with it." And Duncan trying to be the stoic hero of like, "You don't have to do this." And Richie's just like, "The hell I don't. We're doing it. You don't have a choice."
Right.
Like, I was all about that. So that's great. So that's our favorites and our least favorites for season 5.
Yeah.
Good stuff. But there's one last thing we got to do.
One more thing?
Yeah, we got awards. We got to give out some awards.
All right.
You know what he is. Serial killers, cannibals, mad bombers, psychopaths come in all shapes and sizes, Mr. McLeod, and it makes no earthly difference to me because my job's simple. I bury them.
All righty. It is awards time. We have we have 3 awards to give out for this season.
Do, 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 do.
Our first award is the Kurgan Award. That is the award that goes to the best villain of season 5.
Mm-hmm.
We have 5 nominees. And the nominees
are
Robert Wisden as William Culbraith. He's great, and Culbraith was a very compelling villain.
Yes.
Andrew Divoff as Gavriel Larka.
Yep.
Same thing, compelling villain, but also delightfully over the top. Mm-hmm. And Andrew Divoff doing silly accents, I'm going to vote for and nominate all the time.
Of course.
Valentin Pelka as Kronos. Just
because,
I mean,
of course.
He wants to rule the world. That wig he wore for the Bronze Age stuff and the face paint.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Rial Andrews as Harish Clay. We didn't talk about him a ton, but that episode was pretty good because he killed Duncan's teacher and mocked Duncan and really just made him feel like crap and then was going to do the same thing to Richie. And Duncan gets to take him out. And plus, just physically, he's such a good match for Adrian Paul. Harish Clay was great.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And finally, Anthony DeLongis as Ottavio Canzone, who...
Yes.
So good. He was fantastic. Yeah. Anthony DeLongis is great. And that character of Canzone was such a bastard. So it's really
funny that we have one bad guy who killed a teacher of Duncan, another one who was a teacher of Duncan.
Yeah. Yeah. And the Kurgan Award for the best villain of season 5 goes to Valentin Pelka as Kronos. I mean, really. Come on.
Because of course. World domination. Come on.
World domination's going to win. He tests and creates a virus that has no cure that will wipe out most of the planet, and he holds it over everybody's head. And it takes the combined efforts of Mythos and Duncan to stop him.
Mm-hmm.
So
it doesn't get worse than that.
He is our biggest bad guy of the season. All right. So our second award, the Dragonhead Katana Award for the best non-Duncan McLeod weapon.
Mm-hmm.
And this one goes to Kronos' sword.
This was no contest.
Yeah. No contest. What the weapons were not focused on as much in this season.
No.
But interestingly, the swordplay was much better in this season.
Yeah.
So they focused more on that than kind of giving us interesting weapons to look at. We do have one honorable mention, and that is Silas's axe, because Richard Ridings as Silas was awesome, and he was just a giant bear of a man that swung this huge axe, and it was cool.
Yeah. I mean, going back to Kronos' sword, the one other thing I think we both noticed and talked about was, like, not only was it this big sword, but it had a very intricate, gnarled hilt that he used to its effect, that it wasn't just like, oh, bad guy's got big, showy, gnarly hilt. It's like, no, he actually used that in his fight.
Yep.
And it was like one of those things we both were like, okay, that's good, that's smart. Not just to give him that kind of sword, but to have him know how to use that kind of sword.
Yeah, they put that great big cross guard on it, and then he uses the cross guard the way that you should use that, which is nice to see. So yeah, it is Kronos' sword. It was always going to be. There was no contest there.
Right.
And our final award for season 5, the Christopher Lambert Award for the best guest star of the season. Our nominees are Bruce A. Young. Yeah, it's okay. Bruce A. Young as Carl Robinson. I mean, coming back.
Yeah.
He was great in season 2, and bringing him back, and it was a good episode. And I mean, Bruce A. Young, just charismatic as all get out. So he's great. Valentin Pelka again is Kronos. He's a great guest star. And he Valentin Pelka also got to be in Archangel as a form of Ahriman.
Right.
Tracy Scoggins as Cassandra. She's great, starting off the season with her and then bringing her back and adding backstory to before she was this powerful witch that lived in the woods. I think the only thing that I would have liked is for her to come back in Archangel and really complete that prophecy thing. But either way, she was compelling when she was on screen. It was great to see run into somebody who knew Mythos and didn't like him. Like, she sees him and immediately sees red and is like trying to rip his head off with her bare hands. So that was cool. Ron Perlman as the messenger, AKA fake Mythos. Look, we talked about it. It's just that intensity that he brings. The character was really cool to have this character who's just preaching. Because that whole episode, you're thinking, especially if it's the first time you're seeing it, you're thinking, okay, when's the turn? When's he going to let loose and be like, ah, I was lulling you into false sense of security so I could kill you? No, this guy literally just, that's all he wanted was peace.
Yeah.
Enough so that he didn't fight back when Culbraith wanted to take his head. Like, he just let it happen.
Yeah.
And finally, Roger Daltrey as Hugh Fitzcairn, because it's Roger Daltrey.
Because Hugh. And
it's Hugh. Hugh's back. It was fun. Yeah. It was such a silly episode. I loved meeting on the battlefield at dawn, and it's the golf course. And watching that evolve throughout it. So, and our award for the Christopher Lambert Best Guest Star Award in Season 5 goes to... Ron Perlman as the messenger.
Yeah.
It's hard to... it's kind of hard to argue with that one. Like, they're all great. And there were, and that's just the five we mentioned. There were so many good guest stars in this season. But there was something about Perlman. I think it's having an actor of that stature, that gravitas, going back and seeing it. And it, again, it's that, for me, it's that that intensity, that simmering right there below the surface the whole time. That added extra layer.
He's intense, but he's subtly intense.
Yeah.
And he almost lets go one time to prove a point.
Yes.
And then he immediately is like, and I'm proving this point. I've proved my point and I'm done. I'm not going to say that again to you, kind of thing. And then still the conversation he has with Mythos about why would you do this? Why would you act this way? And it's like, why would you not?
So good. So good, because he almost had Mythos convinced. Like there was a split second where Mythos is like, maybe this guy is right. You know what? Nah, I'm just gonna walk away. Like, I'm not dealing with this anymore. So it's Ron Perlman. That's our Christopher Lambert Award. That's season five, folks. Like,
It was
some good stuff. It's, for my money, it's the best season of the whole run. So definitely, it's on Freevee. You can be, if you're not watching along with us yet, what are you doing? Catch yourself up. Go back and watch it again. I may go back and watch Comes a Horseman and Revelation 6-8 again, just because I can't get enough of those. It's just Mythos. Right. All Mythos, all the time. But yeah, that's season five. Now, our season five is not quite done yet. No, gentle listener, we're going to do something for you.
Yeah.
Something that we have been dreading since we said we were going to do it. But for you, we do this. And that is, Audie and I are going to watch Highlander, The Source. A lot of people say Highlander 2, The Quickening is the worst Highlander movie. Oh, no. Oh, no, no, no. Highlander 2, The Quickening is a cocaine-fueled fever dream. Don't get me wrong. But it's like bonkers in all the ways that kind of work. The Source, well, I'm going to save my thoughts on it until next week.
Let's do that and just save it for the one time we have to talk about it.
But we're going to do it. That's next week coming up. And that will end our season five with Highlander, The Source. So come on back for that. That'll be great. And look, if you want to watch us record this show live, you can do that on Tuesdays, 9 p.m. Eastern time at twitch.tv/TVsTravis. You can hang out and be like Ace, and Kelly138 is also in the chat hanging out with us. And you can see the show getting made. You can hear us between segments kind of talking it out and figuring out where we're going, all that good stuff. So we do that every week. The show comes out on Thursdays, anchor.fm/Let's Watch Highlander. And if you can leave a rating and review on your favorite podcast application, whether it's Google Podcasts, Apple, whatever, that helps the show become more discoverable as well. I am all over the social medias as TV's Travis, and I love to talk about Highlander. I love to talk about comics, pop culture, movies, whatever you want. So hit me up there, TV's Travis. I'm most active on Twitter, but pretty much any social network, you'll find me on there. And Audie, you are also all over the place, but mostly on Twitter, I think, as well, right?
Yeah, you can find me at the Audie Norman. And at this point, I'm just like, yeah. And until Twitter's actually gone, that's the best place to find me and to, you know, talk about stuff. So,
yeah,
I'm there. You can find me on Instagram at the Audie Norman. That's where you'll find most of my art and stuff.
Yeah.
Definitely. Occasional pictures of my kids. Doing
gotta,
weird, funny,
you gotta
wacky
check out
stuff.
The art for sure, because it's great.
Yeah.
And you told me about what you want to do for season 6 art, and I can't wait for that. That's going to be fun.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
So be ready for that. But that is season 5, everybody. And so we will be back next week talking about Highlander the Source, unfortunately, but we'll be here for it. So look, you're going to want to listen to that, because I have thoughts.
Yeah.
I have thoughts, I have concerns, I have questions. And I have comments, and we're going to get them all next week. So until then, until Audie and I talk about a Highlander the Source, for Audie, I'm Travis, letting you know to remember that there could be only one season 5.
Yeah, blind loyalty, very common in the young.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.